four up at World Service office. She works for World Service, and she is the conference chairman, conference secretary. She is really a lovely person. Her name is Helen G., and she is a real dolly from Yonkers, New York.
Jackie gave me a warm fuzzy earlier today. And thank you, Jackie, for that loving and very gracious introduction. And many thanks, too, to the conference committee for inviting me and to everyone for the warm welcome that has been extended to me. Now, as I boarded the plane this morning, I kept thinking, thank you, that visiting here was like a homecoming weekend for me. About 12 years before I joined Al-Anon, about two of those years were spent in Webster Springs in West by God, Virginia. And I have many fond memories of those days and the loving people that I met. But looking back, I think I could have used Al-Anon in those days. In order to get into or out of Webster Springs, and I was talking to a very charming gentleman this evening at dinner, and we both agreed that you have to go either up or down the mountain and around the switchback. Now, that can get pretty scary if the driver behind the wheel is a little less than sober. And the only reason I mention this is because when I walked through the doors of Al-Anon many years ago, I never dreamed that one day I would be standing again in West Virginia, and this time filled with peace and joy and love, and a little nervous. Hi, everybody. My name is Helen Gimple, and I am a grateful, recovering member of the Woodlawn Discussion Al-Anon Family Group, which meets in Yonkers, New York, and the conference secretary. I am so happy to be here and to have the privilege of attending the 10th West Virginia Al-Anon Conference, and to renew old friendships and to make new ones. But most of all, I am grateful that my higher power has made it possible for me to share with you this evening. The God of my understanding, in his love and wisdom, knew that I needed you at this point in my recovery, your love and your warmth. As conference time approached, I began to think, you know, very happily about coming down here, and of course that I was to speak. And I asked myself, how can I convey to you all that Al-Anon has done for me? How my life has changed through this beautiful program of recovery? Where do I start? And since the theme of this convention is Came to Believe, I decided to focus my experiences on that theme and how I came to believe in a higher power. And after much reflection, it came to me that my belief in a higher power was found through firmly believing that God works through people, particularly Al-Anon people. We are his instruments for good, and the power of example is a strong force for good. Now, I know I have to work my program myself. No one can do that for me. But over the years, I have been so inspired and have gained so much courage to go on, to keep on trying, through members who have been willing to guide me through troubled times, to give of themselves. The kindness, the loving concern, the words of encouragement in moments of despair and self-doubt, all these have contributed to my spiritual growth and to my becoming the person I am today. It has been my experience that God works through people in answering prayer and in healing me physically, spiritually, and emotionally. Well, I lost my place. How about that? From early childhood, I was taught to believe in God and had been given a religious education. While I never lost faith in the existence of God, the circumstances of my life shattered my trust, and by the time I came to Al-Anon, I felt abandoned by the God of my childhood. But at that first meeting that I attended, I heard the words of a longtime member, and over the years I've heard them often and have used them myself, how blessed we are to have found Al-Anon. Truly, we have been touched by the hand of God. And I left that first meeting filled with hope, hope for myself and my husband, and the comforting knowledge that God had not turned away from me after all. I had turned away from God. I had allowed my problems to come between God and myself instead of focusing on His will and guidance. And the words of the suggested closing kept ringing in my ears all the way home. No situation is too difficult to be bettered, and no unhappiness too great to be lessened. I knew I had come to the right place. My husband and I were childhood sweethearts, and I was married about 19 years when I came to Al-Anon. Our early married life had been reasonably happy. There were unpleasant situations, arguments, and disagreements, but they were isolated incidents, and I never connected them with drinking. I knew nothing about alcoholism. Whatever problems we had, we seemed to solve them together, or so I thought, until I realized that the reason we appeared to get along so well in those early years was because I submerged my true feelings. I practiced peace at any cost, and I cried a lot. When I came to Al-Anon, I was caught in a cage of my own making. I had built my own prison, served as my own jailer, locked in by my obsession with my husband's drinking. My every waking moment was devoted to how much was he drinking, where, when, with whom, and what would happen when he would come home in the evening. Emotionally, I had crawled right into the bottle with him. During the day, I would spend hours rehearsing exactly what I would say to him when he would come home in the evening, only to find that I had to throw away the entire script after the first line and the first sniff because nothing went according to the way I had imagined it. Part of my insanity was in daydreaming and lying awake at night, planning meticulously down to the minutest detail how I could destroy the bar he frequented during his working day. I had three plans. One, I could burn the place down by throwing a lighted cigarette or a match in the trash basket in the ladies' lounge, because I knew where that was. Two, I could run past or drive past and throw a brick with a bomb attached, you know, through the window. I was having some difficulty with that one, but I was working on it. And three, and this was my favorite, I had a small bank account in my name, and I figured I could take that money out, hire some ladies of the evening, oh, you got the picture already, install them in the bar, call the police, they would come, raid the place, shut it down, and that would be the end of that. It never occurred to me that there is always another bar around the corner or across the street. Since that time, my husband lost his job, but found another one within the same vicinity, and the bar was eventually torn down to build an apartment house. And I was overjoyed at that. You know, my worries were over, right? But would you believe that bar relocated within a short distance from where my husband was then working? I used to have imaginary conversations with the bar owner. In my mind's eye, I would call him up and I would tell him exactly what I thought of him and what he was doing to my husband. I had also developed what I thought was a very clever tactic. I've since learned that many others have done the same thing. I would write letters to my husband at night when he was, you know, sleeping, and I would put them on the dresser so that he would be sure to find them in the morning. And then I would follow him around from room to room with the tears running down my cheeks, rehashing the events of the night before as well as the events of the past 5 years or so. And then I would wonder why he would leave so angrily in the morning. Recently, I found one of those notes. I kept it. It was buried in the back of a dresser drawer, and it was yellowed with age and dated Saturday, September 1962. And I would like to read some excerpts from that note. Okay, dear John, this is supposed to be very sad now. We've got to have a long talk and come to some sort of understanding or compromise. I'm sad and lonely and unhappy much too often lately. If you love me like you say, I don't think you want me to feel like this. Every night it's the same thing and I just can't stand it anymore. I don't want to complain all the time, but it isn't fair that I have to be alone all the time and have no companionship. What kind of marriage is that? It is beginning to tear me to pieces. Maybe it wouldn't matter if I didn't love you, but I do. I am depressed. If only I could talk to you now, but I have no one, not even you. P.S. We are having company for dinner Sunday. Try and get some liquor someplace on your way home. The martyr's role suited me and to any of my friends who would listen. I would sadly explain how I felt I no longer existed as a person and was merely an extension of John. Afraid to express opinions, afraid to make decisions, afraid to be wrong, afraid to do anything without permission. And I also felt that if we had been blessed with children, things would be different. And certain that I was no longer a good wife and a poor excuse for a woman, I felt responsible for the drinking, and I became overcome with guilt. And as the drinking increased, so did the severe headaches, the fear, and overwhelming loneliness. Here I was facing what to me was the most disastrous thing in my marriage, and I felt utterly alone. And the denial of the possible existence of alcoholism in my husband just clouded everything that was happening. And along with the feeling of guilt and loneliness came self-pity, resentment, anger, and a deep, deep sense of inferiority. And the bitterness that I felt towards his parents, it ate at the core of me like a cancer. Love was being replaced by hate, and most of all, I disliked the bitter person that I had become. And with that dislike, the sense of inferiority grew stronger and stronger, and self-confidence grew weaker and weaker. I allowed all these faulty attitudes to warp what was once a cheerful and agreeable disposition, and I blamed it all on my husband's drinking. Actually, I was ambivalent at times. Sometimes I would blame myself or his parents for the drinking, and then the next moment I would blame John for all that was happening to me. Truly, my life had become unmanageable, and I had yet to learn that in order to find any peace of mind, these stumbling blocks, these character defects had to be removed. And one day, when I thought I was losing my mind and no longer wanted to live, I got down on my knees and cried out, "Dear God, please help me." Before long, the telephone rang. It was my dearest friend, and after listening to me for a few moments, she told me she had been reading some articles about alcoholism in her local newspaper and suggested that I call AA. Perhaps they could help me. And I did, and I was then directed to Al-Anon. It took me some time in Al-Anon to accept that my husband, a good, fine, and talented human being, a loving and devoted husband, is a victim of the disease of alcoholism, and that I too am a victim of the effects of this insidious illness. But I have embraced this beautiful program of recovery, Al-Anon, but my husband as yet has not admitted his powerlessness over alcohol or that his life is unmanageable. But I never give up hope. Through the 12 steps of Al-Anon, I have gradually come to accept that my husband's desire for sobriety is between himself and his higher power, and that my sanity and serenity does not and need not depend on his sobriety. In Al-Anon, I learned that while accepting my powerlessness over alcohol and other people, I do have a power, a God-given one, over my own mind, emotions, actions, and reactions. And if I express that power wisely, problems outside me will work out. The word courtesy helps to remind me that John is other things besides a husband. He is a man, a person whose life experiences are totally different from mine. He is a mind, a soul, a set of emotions unique in every way, just as I am. He is a person to be respected and to treat always with courtesy. And I have learned that courtesy generates courtesy. And our relationship has improved considerably. And I also learned that whatever my husband does is no reflection on me. When I was in Al-Anon about 4 years, we moved from the Bronx, which is a borough of New York City, to Yonkers, where I now live, which is a suburb of New York City, just north of New York City. Now, the situation had improved considerably due to, even in spite of the drinking, due to my change in attitude, and so I look forward to our new surroundings with great expectations. Decorating the apartment took first priority, and this new obsession demanded all my time and energy. I started missing meetings. Once again, depression started, and I felt terribly discouraged, and I started crying a lot, just as I did before Al-Anon, and the terrible headaches started recurring. I decided to find a new doctor in my new neighborhood. And I had heard that the National Council on Alcoholism maintained a list of doctors who were knowledgeable or familiar with alcoholism, so I called there to find a doctor. I thought, well, he'll know why I'm coming to him and why I'm so sick and having headaches, and also, if John seeks recovery, I'll have a doctor, you know, I could send him to. I was still in there, kind of, you know. Oh, well. And this doctor prescribed Valium for what he thought ailed me. And thank God my body rejected that drug. I could not tolerate it. And after about 10 days, he did take me off that medication, and I have never had to resort to alcoholism, to Valium or any tranquilizer again, and for that I am very grateful. But I continued to be terribly discouraged, and my higher power did intervene. One day my sponsor called, and after listening to my litany of complaints, she very kindly but firmly suggested that I had better get back to meetings. And I did go back to my home group then the following Monday, my regular group. And the discussion that day was on one of hope. And I left that meeting greatly comforted and encouraged. And at that meeting was a wise and loving member, Margaret D., the first editor of the Forum. And as a result of that meeting, Margaret wrote an editorial in January of 1969 entitled Even the Desert Blooms. And it can be found in volume 2 of the soft-covered set, you know, of Forum Favorites. And in that editorial, Margaret writes that many members experience arid times, desert places in their lives. And I would like to quote from that editorial. It may well be that we sometimes need these low spots in our lives. We cannot live at the peak always, as the desert needs rest and quiescence before it flames into bloom. Just so may we need dormant periods to enable us to reach greater heights of understanding and acceptance. If even the desert blooms, so can we, and so can my dear friend, end quote. If, to this day, that editorial is a source of strength to me, and I return to it often whenever I become discouraged or I feel that I am not practicing my program properly or it seems to elude me. And the title of that editorial comes from one of our earliest pamphlets entitled One Wife's Story, and is now known as Lois's Story. I learned another important lesson from that experience. I cannot miss meetings. They are paramount to my sanity, my spiritual growth, my serenity, and my physical well-being. So if there are any new members here tonight, May I encourage you to attend your home group regularly. Become involved. Help with the setting up and the cleaning up and the refreshments and putting out the literature. There is much help and wisdom to be gained before and after the meeting. And try not to hesitate to be a group officer when asked. That was one of the first steps up the ladder to self-esteem for me. I'll never forget when I was asked to be group secretary. It just made me feel so good. Someone thought that I was capable of doing something for the group when I felt so inadequate. Service begins at the group level, and it has been said that service is a privilege, for it is in giving service that we find recovery. And if possible, choose a sponsor, someone you feel comfortable with. Sponsors can be of invaluable help when you are having trouble with the program, and usually they are good listeners and will help you over the rough spots and when the going gets really tough. I have had a few sponsors in my Al-Anon life, but the very first is special to me, and we are dear friends. Now I not only call her when I am troubled and confused, but when I have good things happening to me, the happy times in my life, like coming to West Virginia, for instance. And sponsorship works both ways, of course, and there will come a time when you too will be privileged to sponsor a newcomer. And personally, I feel that that is one of the most rewarding experiences an Al-Anon member can have. And I never want to forget that first group that I attended. It was there I learned my basic Al-Anon, and those dear people accepted me with love and tolerance and understanding, and it was through them that my love for Al-Anon grew and was nurtured. I also learned how to smile again at that group. We used to meet at the table. It was a T-shaped table that we met at in the room, and I used to sit way down back in the corners hoping that no one would see me and that they wouldn't ask me to say anything. And one day, a longtime member looked down the table and she said, "Helen, for goodness sakes, why don't you smile? No wonder the poor man drinks." She confided to me after that she really didn't think that was a good Al-Anon thing to say, but it sure helped me. It really did. I went home that night and I practiced smiling in front of the mirror, you know, and I kept going like this, because I felt as if the muscles in my cheek had, you know, they began to deteriorate, and I thought, you know, how would anybody know I was suffering if I smiled? But I did learn how to smile. Now I smile a lot, and it comes from the inside. It really does. I don't have to practice smiling anymore. And that same member also encouraged me to start a group in the neighborhood where I moved to in Yonkers, and that was a great thing to do. And that group will be starting its 14th. Will be celebrating its 14th anniversary this coming fall. In 1969, I was offered a part-time job at the World Service Office 2 days a week. I had not worked in about 16 years, although I had worked for a large insurance company, but I had stopped working when my husband got out of service. But prior to that job offer, I had done volunteer work at the World Service Office for about 3 years, so I had regained some measure of self-confidence, and I shall always be grateful to that member who subtly persuaded me to do volunteer work at the office. Actually, looking back, I do believe she conned me into going. But volunteer work did play a very important role in my personal recovery. I started to give instead of always looking to get, And I became aware that Al-Anon is indeed a worldwide fellowship that extends far beyond my own small group. So I went back to work, very frightened, but happy to be back in the mainstream. And I did filing, and I worked in group records and on forum subscriptions, and that was long before we went into computerization. I continued working for 2 days a week, and in 1970, I was asked to be the hospitality chairman of the World Service Conference, and that was a volunteer assignment at that time. And in 1975, I became the assistant to the first conference secretary, Holly. And when Holly resigned in 1978 due to ill health, I was given the assignment of conference secretary. I started working full-time, and that is where I am today. I also had the responsibility and the privilege of coordinating the first regional service seminar, which was held in Banff, Alberta, in October of 1980, and that was a growing spiritual experience. These experiences and many, many more have helped to shape the person that I am today, a far cry from the weepy and distraught individual that walked through the doors of Al-Anon many years ago. About a year and a half ago, my husband lost his job. Now, this was not the first job he lost, but this time he was no longer a young man and was just 3 months from retirement age. My initial reaction was just as it was in the past, fear and anger. How could he do this to me? How will we manage? How will my life change? He had no plans for retirement, no pension, and saddest of all for him, no program to offer him spiritual and emotional support. But I do have a program, and I am so grateful for that. And Al-Anon helped me to get past those initial feelings of anxiety. I need to work very hard on detachment with love, especially when I come home in the evenings from work. It is sometimes painful, but I have to watch that I do not get into, you know, his business of self-pity and bitterness. And the serenity prayer and the slogans live and let live and let go and let God help me immeasurably. And I firmly believe that God wants only the best for me. Each day, during my quiet time, I read the last paragraph from page 221 of Al-Anon Faces Alcoholism, which says, "Today I have decided to stay with the alcoholic, and every day I make that commitment. I have decided to accept him for what he is right now. He may change tomorrow, or he may never change. To make the best of it and to respect him as he respects me. I will be happy, since happiness is an inside job. I will mind my own business, since all I have is one day at a time. I better mind it well." This does not mean that I go around with my head in the sand or in the clouds. I do have to deal periodically with discouragement. I have had to learn to be patient with God and to firmly believe that answers to prayer will come in his good time. As a dear friend recently reminded me, you cannot plant an acorn one day and expect to sit in the shade of the oak tree the next. Now, when I am perplexed, I seek seclusion. And in silence, I wait for the replies to come, and they do. I have learned to count my blessings, which are so bountiful, I cannot count them all. And I have come to believe that I am truly directed by my higher power in ways that are for my highest good. I am reminded of an inspiring message which was shared at the 1980 World Service Conference. Be yourself, but be your best self. Dare to be different and follow your own star. And don't be afraid to be happy. Enjoy what is beautiful. Love with all your heart and soul. Believe that those you love love you. Forget what you have done for your friends and remember what they have done for you. Disregard what the world owes you and concentrate on what you owe the world. When you are faced with a decision, make the decision as wisely as possible. Then forget it. The moment of absolute certainty never arrives. And above all, remember, God helps those who help themselves. Act as if everything depended upon God and pray as if everything depended upon God. And over the years, my awareness of God's presence in my daily life has grown, not only in times of crisis, but in the little happenings of life. For instance, this past Valentine's Day, when I felt the pain of rejection by some friends. It was a Thursday, and that is the day we have an Al-Anon meeting at the World Service office during lunch. And I had planned to shop for a bridal shower gift and not attend the meeting. But an Al-Anon member on the staff to whom I had confided my feelings encouraged me to attend. And as I sat down at the table, I was asked to lead the meeting. I chose the topic, rejection. Most of us brown bagged at that meeting, and as I unwrapped my sandwich, which my husband had prepared for me that morning, out dropped two little red paper hearts. On one it said, I love you, John. And on the other it said, so do I, Dino. Dino is our cat. I became teary-eyed at that point. It was such an unexpected expression of love when I was feeling so unloved at that moment. Everyone went on to share their experiences with rejection. But the tone of the meeting became one of love, and I learned so much that day. Loving concern was given so freely, and it healed the pain. Another beautiful experience I had happened at the Regional Service Seminar this past fall in Boise, Idaho. At that seminar, I met a young woman who now has a very special place in my heart. And even though we are separated by a generation and thousands of miles, God allowed our lives to touch in a way that I never thought possible. She said I reminded her of her mom, not only in appearance, but in personality. I was touched, and I told her that I was honored, and that if I had a daughter, I would like her to be just like her. I later learned that she had lost her mother several years ago. A few weeks after I had met her, I received a letter when I was feeling very, very low. Now we occasionally have mini meetings by mail, and I like to believe that God was using both that young Al-Anon member and myself as his instruments at a time when we both needed each other's strength and courage and love. Her open and honest sharing has made it possible for me to recognize feelings of guilt that I had towards my own mother and which I had kept buried for many years. And I met another member that weekend, a woman about my own age, living with active alcoholism. We shared and we wept a moment together, not out of self-pity, but out of compassion for the alcoholic. And in the end, we laughed together out of joy and gratitude at having a program to live by, and we promised to pray for each other. Since then, she has sent me a few of her spiritual messages, and I treasure them. Through experience, I have learned that I need the help and strength and courage of all of you. One evening, while I was reflecting on what I would share with you, I heard the strains of an old familiar song coming over the stereo. "I've Got to Be Me," the music said. Now, the lyrics go, "Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I'm weak or whether I'm strong, I've got to be me." And it occurred to me that I enjoy that kind of personal freedom, a freedom of the spirit, the freedom to do and to be what I want to do and to be, the freedom to be right without self-righteousness, and the freedom to be wrong without guilt, remembering that when I am wrong, to promptly admit it, and when I am right, may I please be possible to live with. Where I was once weak, I am now strong. I have discovered how to be myself, and my sense of self is the backbone in my effort to change the things I can, namely myself. I came to Al-Anon searching for answers to a specific problem, little realizing that developing myself could be the answer not only to the problem of living with alcoholism, but to myself as well. As it says in our One Day at a Time, "Resolve to be thyself and know that he who finds himself loses his misery." I find I can realize my own strength and confidence by working faithfully with the Al-Anon program and using it in my daily life, believing that when I do this each day, all that I am, all that I have, and all that I hope to be comes from my higher power. In closing, I would like to say, or to share with you, something that I read many years ago in the forum. It inspired me then, and I use it sometimes in meditation when my thoughts are centered on a troubled friend or I am having a difficult time. I don't recall what the article was about or what the problem was, only that it was one member reaching out to another in love and friendship. The article ended with the words, "Dear friend, put your hand in mine today across the miles, for today mine is in God's hands, and together we will make it." And isn't that what Al-Anon is all about? I love you all. God bless you. Thank you.
On behalf of the conference, I would like to thank you. And this is a gift from the conference, and this was made by this lady right here. We certainly appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you all so much, and may God bless you always in all ways. I shall always remember my visit to West Virginia, and the weekend isn't even over yet.
You're welcome, dear. You know, hearing Helen's story, I know why we had an instant rapport. I didn't really burn that place down.
No, I didn't either, but I thought about it a lot.
It burned, but I didn't do it.
Oh. I hate to wrap paper. I'm one of those people that say paper, but I think I better just do it now. I'm so nervous here.
I love the way these coincidences happen in life.
Beautiful.
She reads all the newsletters, and I had asked our newsletter editor to read the steps.
Look, isn't that gorgeous?
Oh.
That is just beautiful. Oh, thank you all. Thank you all so much, so very, very much. I'll have to have people sign this now and pass it around. You know, inside, so some of them have. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I had all my little things here in the card, too. Oh, dear. I wasn't too...